Hey, what are you listening to?
Oh, you didn't get that?
Get what?
Themnutspodcast.com.
Welcome to Them Nuts Podcast Show, hosted by comedians Darius Campbell, Ray Chung, and Matt Cole. Also, Bucky, the executive producer, and the producer, Luis Gomez. You can check us out on all your social media networks.
Your fucking time with those idiots.
This is how grown-ups talk.
But, you know, like,
grown-ups do this, right?
Yeah.
Dude, I've met him three or four times.
Because my kids, Them Nut Podcast.
The problem is that nothing you've done is getting bigger. Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, wow.
I just got a write-up in...
So I was like, okay.
Oh, good for you, buddy.
Yeah. Well, you know, the word of
mouth. How we going? We ready?
It's a free show.
Oh, we already up.
If you build it,
that nigga, he,
it really is.
He comes in stealth. Our producer is number one in the world of coming in stealth.
I'm trying to work out a better budget with the place.
Matt,
I don't know if that's going to work out.
Matt, you know we're fired hot.
Oh, we're on air.
Yeah,
right,
we're fired hot, man. You know your producer sneaks in. Oh no! Don't you know? It picks you up.
Nice.
You sit back and relax, man. There you go. Put your nuts up, man, because you're on Them Nuts Podcast, man. Who do we got in the house, man?
Chris Dunham. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, well, all right. Go on. Sit down, relax, man. He got you. He'll pick you up. You know, whatever you want. You want us to bring your stripper in? Let us know.
Stripper.
We do. What we do.
Really? You're gonna really bring him a stripper?
Yeah.
You would call up and bring a stripper in?
No. Right now, I got a stripper for him.
Who?
Sachi?
Oh, God.
Sachi?
Why do I got a feeling that Sachi has, like, a C-section scar?
No, it's worse.
Isn't dog just walking back? Yeah, you notice?
Oh.
Smells like a fucking asshole. She's
no, Sachi
teeth.
Has her own
is,
fucking
she is, like,
fan base,
for the
man.
Yeah,
Sachi
that dog
is
had fucking issues, man.
That dog's been on every guy that's set in that
dog's
shit.
Dog's missing teeth, man. It's not even a pretty smile.
She's a pretty smile, man. She's a wonderful bitch. She's
dude,
really
I've actually,
a bitch.
I've been having, I didn't know what it was, what you'd call this, but I was on BuzzFeed today. I realized I'm suffering from dog envy. Have you ever heard of dog envy?
You want other people's dogs?
I want a dog, but I know I can't afford a dog and take care of it. So, like, every dog I see, I'm just, like, it's a baby. Like, that's my biological clock.
That is. That's your, it's, you had a baby, but you want a dog instead. Then.
Have you ever had a dog?
I don't
want
to be alone.
Have you ever had a dog?
Oh, grew up with dogs.
Okay.
Have you ever been on Facebook and seen Boo?
What?
No.
Oh, go check out Boo. It's a Pomeranian that shaved down, looked like a little fucking fuzzy teddy bear. It's the most adorable. I mean, honestly, it's the most adorable thing in the
world. Honey Boo Boo?
Yeah, I grew
Boo.
Up with.
B.O., buddy.
German Shepherds, Giant Schnauzers, working dogs. My dad was involved with a German dog sport called Schutzhund. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh,
no. German.
Dude, they make, like one just sold, the most expensive one that's ever sold was for $1 million.
A dog
what?
That costs $1 million.
Yeah, because they make police dogs look like amateurs, like open micers.
Is this all for the German police, or
no? There's tracking, protection work, and then there I forgot the other thing. But
brutalization and killing.
Like my dad, my dad traveled to Germany just to buy one of our dogs.
Whoa!
Yeah.
How did your dad get into this?
I don't know how the hell he got it. Well, my dad
random.
Was just a.
It's pretty simple.
My dad loved
first.
Violent things. Think about it. He loved war, sports, and killer dogs. You know,
holy shit. Like war reenactments or sports, like.
No, I mean
like
he loved
hunting
war.
The dangerous game, like, you know,
like he would, like he would read war history and stuff like that, like
oh
war tactics
God,
and stuff
dude.
Like that.
I think at one point I could verbatim go and with the movie Patton. I've watched that movie so many times, or A Few Good Men. We saw the movie Top Gun, I think, 7 times in the movie theater.
Jeez.
Dude, my dad even got us Top Gun hats.
By the way, you know Top Gun is the biggest gay parable that's ever been.
It's hilarious. Playing with the boys.
I'll ride my tail anytime.
The chick that he finally hooks up the chick when she finally dresses like the boy in the elevator. Remember that? Yeah. Her hair's all tucked back. She's got the hat on. Then he takes her to bed.
Okay, I missed that movie.
So you're dead?
Yes.
Dude, there's even a scene where Tom Skerritt is almost behind him, like straddling while talking to him. Well, Maverick is in his underwear. Oh, and looking back now, he's like Kelly McGillis has come out as lesbian, right?
Yes.
So you never see Top Gun?
Yeah, Kelly McGill. That's
the hot chick from.
That's why there's no chemistry between those two.
We're just waiting for Tom Cruise to come out, and that movie's complete.
So your dad's into all this war stuff and violent stuff, and so he just got into these, like, these trained dogs, these trained German
dogs?
Yeah,
I don't know. Well, first, I think we got a show dog that was a giant schnauzer, but that dog was a pussy, you know, so he couldn't, you know, it just was like, oh, look at me. It had a nice coat on it and all that. Fuck that.
It was a stripper dog.
No, but then he went to Germany, brought back Bar von Otzhoven, and Bar just boom, boom.
What's up, player?
You know, like, just like shredded. Like,
is that muscles on muscles kind
just,
of thing?
Yeah, he was built, and my dad learned German just to speak to the dog.
Holy shit.
They were having like one-on-one conversations.
Yeah.
Your mom got jealous. Why did you talk to me like that?
Like, Bar couldn't even be put in the house.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he had his own cage, like kind of like a cage fighter, you know what I mean? Like someone always getting ready. It was crazy. And then...
So did Michael Vick know about these dogs?
You know what's weird, man? Is like, Michael Vick, I'm like, man, you should have just gotten into Schutzhund, and it would have been cool.
You've been sad, because it seemed like, yeah, these dogs are in cages, ready to be vicious, and just ready to attack.
Because Michael Vick is letting dogs attack dogs. Yeah. It's like, no, let the dog attack a human.
Oh, that was a miss. Okay.
That's where he fucked up.
Yeah. Let him bite a neighbor.
How much do they weigh on average? Are they big dogs?
Well, no. It looks like your average German Shepherd as far as weight.
So like a buck 20, buck 30?
I guess. I don't know. It's been a long, like 20 years since we had one of those dogs in the house. Thank God. Dude, I couldn't have friends over.
Are they that crazy?
Yeah. Like, it just, you were scared. And
just like always scared.
Yeah. What year is comedian? No, I didn't promise my parents. It was their fucking pets.
I couldn't bring my friends here to my house because I had a Rottweiler and he would just straight up molest them.
Molest them?
His name was Tyson.
Tyson.
Try to bite off their ear, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we got a cat after that. Oh, wow. We got rid of the dogs. We
went And how is Sir Meow Mix? Is he?
His name is Whispers. We also had Kitty Boo.
Oh, Kitty Boo. What's up with these boos?
It's an adorable name, man.
Yeah, it's a horrible name.
But we were talking earlier, for anyone that's listening, we were talking about the open mic scene or just comedy scene in Los Angeles. I forgot to tell you guys, Dave Chappelle, my buddy, met him probably.
I thought you were going to say Dave Chappelle, my buddy.
I wish.
I would
not be doing this podcast.
What? I would hope you would invite Dave Chappelle here. Shit.
But my buddy met him at the Comedy Store probably 4 years ago, and Dave said that Los Angeles is the worst place for comedy. You know, it really is.
Where did he recommend? New York?
I think anywhere but L.A.
Really, anywhere else is better than L.A.
Well, I think what it is, and this is something I've come to grips with as well, is the entertainment industry does not care that you do stand-up. Mm-hmm. They don't make the money off it that they can if you write a script, you know what I mean, or you're on a TV show.
Yeah. But I guess if you want to do that, you know, if you want to do stand-up and also, like, venture into screenwriting and all that stuff, then it would be a good place to be?
Yeah. Yeah, when I started...
We're mostly going to get you a mic right
no,
now.
No, no, no. We don't need to get him a mic because his mic picks up by my mic.
Oh, okay.
So that's why our producer is doing his job. And if my producer tells me...
Come on, Motown, get Kelly. Let's get a doo-wop going over here.
Get closer. Doo-wop, boo-wop. No, fuck it. Our producer's doing his job. He's listening.
I'd rather listen to him anyway. Scoot closer. No. It's the accent.
Oh, no, no. It's okay. You're getting him hard over there. You're about to have more than a lady boy.
That's right.
You're that man boy.
Yeah.
Wait. So let's go back to the comedy stuff.
He said that, but I think it's actually the reverse. I think Los Angeles might be the best place for comedy because you have to work harder. You know, the material has to be that much more interesting. Most of the time when I see people, now this isn't always the case, but there's more of an emphasis on being a better performer here than just having the jokes.
That's true.
Also, all the comics I know that have moved to LA from somewhere else say that they had to really break down like a joke style and hide their math and become more conversational. So I think if you're vigilant and not just become some like Los Angeles hack, you know, where your entire act is to cater to talking about comedy while doing comedy, which is
and Tinder,
or suicide.
Yeah, like how many comics?
I'm talking about Tinder.
No, well, no. Like,
that's the joke. If you don't know what Tinder is, it's a joke that all LA comics have.
Or just...
No, I know. It's great. But in Miami, it's the same thing. They're all talking about Tinder.
Really? It's a corny-ass thing.
Like, yeah.
Why do you keep talking?
Well, so many open micers in Los Angeles, their set sounds like a long suicide note.
Yeah.
You know, like...
they're so depressed.
Yeah, where after they get done, you're like, I hope they'll be all right. You know?
Wait, so your buddy asked Dave Chappelle where he should go? Or how did that...
No. I don't know how it came up, but I think Dave just... He just said LA is the worst place for comedy.
Wow.
He has not been to Miami.
He has not been to Miami.
Has not tried the open mics. And I'm talking so much shit about Miami, can I go back anymore? But every Miami comedian I know that has come out here is loving it. So, because again, it's just not, if you just want stage time, because that's the only way to get better.
Yeah.
You have to get it somewhere where you can go out multiple times a night. You just can't do that.
Well, especially because unless you come from a performing background, mm-hmm. Dude, it takes 2 years just to, like, feel somewhat comfortable on stage. Unless you come from a performing background, you know? Or you just have no shame whatsoever, then you'll just, you know?
The no shame thing helps.
Why are you looking at me? I got no shame.
I know you have no shame and no performance. So let's go.
So, Chris, you mean, honestly, you're one of, like, when I look at Facebook feature, you're always in mine, not to be a fucking... That's a fanboy out, but I like a lot of stuff you've been doing for a while. How long have you been doing comedy out here?
I started here 8 years ago.
Okay.
You know, and it's been a great journey.
You started somewhere else first, or?
No, I started here.
Oh, you started here? Okay.
I could tell you everything that I messed up on if you'd like to learn from my experience.
We always do.
Number one, I wish from the start, Monday through Friday, I would have written every single day. Number two, film every set, not audio it.
Oh, shit.
Because... then you can sit back and be like Peyton Manning does. And it's weird. I have problems listening to my own voice, but when I watch a video, I can divorce myself from who's on stage like it's another comic. And then I'm like, oh, wait, you're talking about this. Why aren't you doing that? And I can correct mistakes. Because 90% of... We learned that in Communication 101. 90% or 95% of what you say is how you say it. Yeah.
Yeah, most communication is it's physical, not verbal.
You catch yourself doing weird shit too. You know,
yeah.
You're uncomfortable. And you're
I do this.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, I should stop doing that.
I do my Bill Burr impression.
Wait, what was your guy's first nervous tick? You guys remember?
I was afraid to take out the microphone, so I'd fumble it. So you get that shitty mic railing, and I couldn't even get a joke out. First 2 months, I was just railing a mic back and forth in the stand.
I switched the mic like every 2 seconds.
Yeah, see, my first 4 years, I never took the mic out of the stand.
Oh, you were standing on...
Because I didn't watch video of myself to see how horrible... Like, I saw a video and I went, I wouldn't pay a quarter to see... This isn't a show. This is just a dude talking into a mic that's angry about some shit. You know? Like, it's just... It's shitty spoken word poetry.
Yeah.
Well, I will say this. Watching you... I'm going to fanboy up. You have some of the best act outs on stage I've seen in a long time, man.
Oh,
is that no, honestly, when you did my Clubhouse show, you were just... up and down. You were all over the place. It was awesome. Fuck you guys, dude.
What happened?
Well, no,
this is the part of every episode where Matt like
sucks dick.
Metaphorically sucks dick. Yeah. Every it doesn't matter who. No, he's being right. You are
hey,
a fucking
Matt,
great comic.
Don't worry, dude. I brought you a bib.
Thank you. It's got the magnets on the back. It's my favorite kind. No, but I'm just being honest, man. Like I'm watching you on stage. Like I've seen you do a couple open mics. And this is my first time watching you on a book show, and you were just destroying the room. But your act outs were as good, and you have great material, but it was on par with your material. And like, is that something you had to come into, or is that something you did naturally?
When I saw the combination of things, like I guess when I saw the video, I went, wait, that's not even me. And then I thought, when am I at my funniest just hanging around with my friends? It's when I don't think about the words, you know, and I'm just – and I'll act things out naturally. And then so the first 6 months I was like, okay, I'm going to try to get more physical on stage. That's when I took the mic out of the stand. Oh, my God. It was like – like
he just had an orgasm.
No, it was like – oh, like I was so – like I would hold onto the stand like, oh, don't leave me, you know. And so what I did is I started taking the mic stand and taking it to the farthest end of the stage so I couldn't go like this. Uh-huh. You know, and I still had that. It was like the Phantom.
Yeah, he was reaching for it. Yeah, yeah.
And then everything I tried to get be physical with, which meant that a lot of people looked at me like, what the fuck is he doing? And like, and then after a while, it just started clicking. Like, I remember the first joke where it was had an act out in it. And then now I look at it is if I do a longer set and I'm not drenched in sweat, by the time I get off, I wasn't having a lot of fun, you know. And now I don't worry about the words as much. Because if you come from a writer's background, that's what I did. You know, I was an English lit major. Oh, so shit. I was the guy that was meticulous about the word. Should I use the color pink or blue?
Right.
Like, that's going to make the fucking difference, you know?
Yeah.
And it does.
Yeah.
But that's when, like, I think you already have a strong foundation to the joke, and the joke is already getting laughs, and now you're just trying to perfect it. Yeah, you're taking it to that next level. So now I try to think of, like, okay, instead of telling people the funny, I try to show them the funny.
Right.
Because it's also fun for me.
Right.
You know, I mean, I love being able to act everyone from my mom to my grandma to one of my jokes is about the pray away the gay. So gay dudes holding hands in a prayer circle, trying hard not to be gay. It's just fun. It's straight up fun.
Yeah.
And the audience loves it. I love it. So now,
do you have an acting background?
No. I mean, I acted in two plays in college.
Yeah.
But I never thought of acting as something as like a long-term career. It was the first thing I did that was creative, I guess you'd say, in the performing arts. But it did not translate. I didn't do it long enough to translate it to comedy. Okay. So comedy was more like I was reading a joke book when I first started.
Yeah.
So do you think your I have two questions.
Yeah.
So your first one was do you think your English lit background, did that help you at all?
Well, yeah, especially because it wasn't a creative writing. They didn't even offer that at Duquesne University where I went in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So it was always taking texts like one of Shakespeare's sonnets and then breaking that thing down into
which
a 10-page paper.
Yeah.
And so I love doing that, and that's exactly how I do it with comedy. If you look at it, your premise is your introduction thesis, you know, and then all of your supporting paragraphs are punchlines, tags, act-outs, all that, because it supports whatever you're saying.
So it would help you deep dive, kind of get mind material, mind stuff, whatever, right?
I think that helped, and then I was always the guy that was quick to offer my opinion about stuff, you know? But yeah, I think that really helped. And I had some great professors in college.
Okay.
You know,
just teaching you how to write or something like that.
Yeah. It was, my first English class, in the major, and I got a D on the paper but it said there were two grades on it. It said content and ideas, A, you know, like, grammar, all of that, you know, structure, everything, F. And I went up to him, it was Dr. Benzinger, and said, you know, is there anything I could do? And he just said, I'm going to teach you how to write.
Damn.
And he taught me how to write, and I never got anything less than an A.
Awesome. Really? That's good.
Yeah.
It takes some interest in you.
Yeah, it was great. And I ended up taking an independent reading class with him. So I loved the English Romantics. Do you guys know, like, Wordsworth, Coleridge? Those guys.
Well, a little bit above my.
Do you really know a little bit?
I know Coolidge. Yeah, I've done a couple.
Well,
dude, I'm sorry. Some of his college degrees in here. My bad.
Well, some of us do too, but we didn't take that shit.
None of us want to be gym teachers. All right. So.
Oh!
Go down. Damn. Wow, that hurts.
That'd been great if you threw down the mic.
He really is. He pretty much is. I'm sorry.
No.
Men's
fine.
Gymnastics. My bad. Yeah.
I was a manager.
What did you go to school for?
I took 10 years, but I ended up at CIS. Dude, it really did. There's a lot of alcohol stories in between. It changed from everything, from a Bible college to a fucking. Well, I finished off at Cal Poly Pomona, computer science.
Cool.
And I do computer shit, and then I'm a comedian. On top of that.
Wow.
Yep.
Computer science.
You're the one we want to talk to, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like...
My shit's boring.
My second question was, because you brought it up, I think we kind of glossed over it. We like let it hang. But you said your first advice was write every day. Can you exactly. talk about it? Clarify that.
Oh, yeah. There was... When I was... Now it's 3.5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
I read this book called The War of Art.
Oh, Stephen Pressfield. Really good.
And
really
good. Basically his all the roadblocks that we mentally put in front of ourselves to not do things. And I went, "Whoa, okay." And he said it was harder. And this, he goes, I know it's a jump in logic or whatever. He goes, but it was easier for Hitler to start World War II than it was for him to sit in front of a blank canvas because he was a failed painter.
Yeah.
And so I saw that. And then there was also something I read about Drew Carey, that he would write 10 jokes a day with his friends when he was starting out. And so I just made it 3 jokes a day.
Huh.
And now I use Google Documents. And it could be rewrites, maybe a long story or whatever. Because 90% of... Oh, and here's another thing I read. It was a different book. 90% of what you come up with is going to be utter shit.
Right.
It's a numbers game. So then out of 100 jokes, then you got 5 that you might be able to work with. And if you really work on it, they're like... you know, and then you have 5 that'll come out that are, you've had them. Just straight up gold, where it was like... The heavens opened, and it was just like, here you go.
Yeah, you got your antenna ready.
You said you kind of took Drew Carey's, like, 10 jokes a day with his buddies. Do you do it by yourself? Do you have a writing buddy that you bounce ideas
It originally off started, do you know Jerry Brandt and Nick Petrillo?
Yeah.
It started off with
Petrillo,
those two.
We just had him. He's a great guy.
And then it ballooned into a group of 27 people.
Oh, shit.
That's way too big.
Broken up into 3. And I was kind of like the...
That's 9, by the way, 9 groups.
So I was kind of the commissioner of it, and... You'd be surprised how lazy comics are.
Oh, for sure.
All I was doing was fill.
No. We're not surprised.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not.
And so I was just fielding complaint after complaint. Yeah. Someone's not, because you would have to write your 3 jokes, and then you would also have to, with other people in your group, you'd have to write at least 1 line commenting on that other person, somebody else's joke.
Oh, University
in your
of
group.
Phoenix.
And that's where I got the idea.
Do you ever do free writing exercises, or just fucking just type till something comes out?
I don't know. I kind of now it's to the point where it's almost ingrained.
So what's your routine like now? How do you go about? Because you write every day, I'm guessing, or you try to. So when do you do it? When, like, morning, when you wake up, at night?
Well, whenever. And then now it's only ever. The majority of people quit that group.
Yeah.
I quit. And then Daniel Eaches,
yeah,
a month later, sends me a message. And he went, hey, I'm still writing. Do you want to write together? And I wrote back, I'm still writing.
Yeah.
We're the only 2 out of that group that still have written every day.
And you guys send
Yeah, we use Google Docs and you just share it.
Well, that's not a bad idea.
I don't even know if you've met Eaches. He's really funny comedian, little guy. He made it to the semifinals of Comedy Central's Up Next.
Awesome,
and
man.
He stole all of Chris's jokes.
What's great is Dan. Oh,
sorry.
No.
That one open mic on Fridays in Fullerton. What is that?
Max Bloom's.
That's where I saw him perform. Yeah. Very funny.
Yeah, Daniel works completely different for the most part than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the guy that's really bloated, that English, I must break down every little thing. And then it's just whittling it away. Daniel will start off with like just a little line. And then it just slowly keeps adding to
stuff.
It and mm-hmm. adding and adding.
Huh,
and that's the guy you exchange these Google Docs with?
Yeah. Awesome. But there's times, you know, where we don't get on each other because we know we'll do it. So there's times where like 2 or 3 days will pass and, you know, I won't get around to the notes part of the jokes or vice versa.
So you guys are putting your jokes online and then critiquing each other's joke. Is that how it works?
Yeah. And then what's awesome is, dude, there's the Google Drive app. Is right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I can click on that. I can go all the way back to all the years. I could show now, like, even a joke that started out from the beginning and what it looks like. Because we count rewrites as writing a joke.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But it's good. And it's also, sometimes we laugh at how crappy our jokes is. I remember once he just said, well, I'm trying to do my Daniel.
Yeah, real soft voice.
Hey, guys. Hey Chris, it looks like you completed your 3 for the day. It's just something like that, you know.
So you still keep that 3 jokes a day going?
Yeah. And but if we write a story out and it's long, we consider that 3.
Right.
So basically a page is what you're trying to go for a day.
Is it 3 minutes a day or just 3 jokes? Like what's
3 jokes, okay, 3 individual jokes, 1 big story.
Gotcha.
It could be 3 rewrites. It could be an old joke and you're trying to add tags to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's also some great advice that I wish I would have heard when I started is when you get, it's so hard to come up with a good joke, so just stay on that joke. Tag the living fuck out of it. Every sound that you can come up with to help out the joke, every act out, their characters, how many different premises when you're getting into that subject can you keep attacking? That's how you see all the big comics. Like Bill Burr said, he must write out like four or five things when he's doing 45 minutes. Okay, I'm going to talk about this. And it's like these 7-8 minute chunks of material.
Yeah.
You know?
Let me answer this question. So like, because a lot of us, a lot of guys, a lot of listeners of the comic-wise, newer guys, and we were quick to throw away stuff right away. Like, it doesn't work the first time, it doesn't work the second time. Would you hold on to something where the premise is okay, but rework it later? Or, I mean, if it doesn't work the first or second time, you throw it away and go to something new?
I don't know. I would say that if I really care about something, the only things that I can keep, that I want to keep in my act are the stuff I care about, because then I don't have to remember the joke.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my opinion. I'll keep working on that stuff, and then because there's jokes. The first joke I ever got an applause break on, and it was ridiculous. It was a big show at Laughs in Tucson. I remember the audio. It was 15 seconds of laughter and clapter. It was unreal. I'd never experienced that before. I refuse to do that joke because I don't like the joke.
Okay.
And because I don't care about it, you know. And it would just seem like filler, and then eventually it would not get the laugh. Or I'd feel dirty getting the laugh.
That's something you're proud of, yeah.
Yeah. You know? And especially, it's something I wouldn't want my mom to
see. You're
no
longer using it. What was it right at the end?
Actually, it was a true story. I was hooking up with this girl, and I said, hey, I'm going to go get a condom. And she goes, Chris, don't. I don't want you to do that. I want you to look at me as a freak, but I'm still a virgin. I just want it to be special. I want to save it for marriage. And I said, you can always save your asshole.
Back at 15 seconds of a
blow. Yeah. And I felt
dirty.
In a Mormon
town where that's the fucking guy's loophole, we know what's going on.
And it was just, I don't really like doing, but you'll do that. There's only, for my first year, there's only one joke that I still do. You know? And that's another thing, too. Like, I've noticed the... it's so great. It's like you have your own, like, your act or who you are as a comic. Remember when they say, I think it was in Comedian, they said, however long you've been doing stand-up, that's how old you are?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you get to watch a kid. I don't know what it's like to have a child, but I'm 8 years old, you know? And you see the evolution, and it's great. And that, and your voice outgrows some jokes, and you can't even rework them. It's kind of sad, but at the same time, you're like, okay, I've got to move on.
Stuff like that, like jokes that you can't use anymore, do you ever record them to the point where you like them and like throw them on like a YouTube clip so people can watch them and you can go back to them and see them later? Like, oh, I remember how that's good, but I can't use it anymore. Or you just discard them entirely?
I just throw it into the joke file.
Okay.
You know, because also if something doesn't work, because once again, I always look at it as my opinion, is... I'll come back – once I really start thinking about something, I'll come back to that line of thinking and like trying to find God, my joke about legalizing weed for the tax money, if people saw how many pages I wrote trying to find a positive angle about drugs and then – but I'd keep on coming back to that. And then eventually it was just like, boom, the joke wrote itself because I'd already been thinking that way. So –
And then you moved to Washington and you were like, excited, I smoke.
It was actually me. It was crazy. You guys ever do Rick Rome's and Rome
oh,
and
yeah.
Liam's?
Yeah, yeah.
I was coming back off the road and I was so pissed because I was crossing the border and they shot down weed getting legalized a couple years ago.
Yeah.
What was it, like 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was fucking furious. I went, you dumb motherfucker. Like, I'm furious in my car by myself. And so I called up Rick Rome while I was driving. I was like, dude, I need stage time. I need to talk about this. And I got on stage and it, not even thinking, and boom, the joke just came to me.
Yeah, just rolled it out.
Yeah.
Rolled itself.
Like, I need to be passionate about shit.
Gotta get my muscles up.
Yeah.
No, because, speaking of the marijuana... I have a friend that's just in town from Washington, and he was telling me just last week they were up smoking in front of the cops. And I'm like, really? You can do this? Yeah, as long as you don't have an ounce in on your possession or at all, you can just smoke weed out in the public.
Well, dude, it's time for the public to wake the fuck up.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. weed is such a soft drug doctors.
It used to be legalized, what, in 1930, they banned it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And
once the government got their hands on it, they didn't want the cash crop of fucking hemp
and
anymore.
Cotton, you know? But yeah, hemp, mm-hmm. hemp doesn't even destroy the environment
no,
the
doesn't.
Way that cotton does.
It's one of the
does.
Best productive crops you can grow, but cotton and tobacco was what we pushed instead of hemp.
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I watch documentaries. Is that cool to talk about?
Yeah, yeah. Me too. Okay. Right. I think
I actually just watched American Addict. Have you seen that one on Netflix?
No, is it good?
About all the pill popping that we do in the
no,
United
No, but my
States.
New favorite show is Drug Incorporated.
Oh, I haven't heard of that
on
one.
It. Go on A&E. Drug. No. National Geographic Channel.
I got Netflix, man. I don't have TV.
Oh, sorry. I have TV. Drug Incorporated. Goes each country, different drugs that are populated around, and different people with addictions and stuff. What they do, check it out, because they go in the inside. They go from the addict's point of view, from the drug dealer's point of view, from the government's point of view, and they fucking hit it, dude. You sit there and you're like, man, and you can see how some of this shit will be just resolved with us just by legalizing it. You know
yeah,
no, it's not even legalizing, just decriminalizing it.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, make, yeah, not,
just like.
We're all waving goodbye to our first guest.
Later, everybody. Buddy. Good meeting you, brother.
Andres, thanks for coming out, buddy.
Yeah, they're making the criminals. People that want to do, like, if heroin was legalized, like, right now, I'm still not going to do heroin.
Yeah.
And I want to collect the tax money so we can divert the funds for rehab. They're sick. No one, they're, people that get addicted to stuff, they're sick. They're physically, emotionally, and mentally sick.
They are, but there's not as much money in rehab as there is in privatized prisons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're so free in this country.
Yeah, dude, this is one of the worst states to be in. This is New York City, man.
No, Texas.
Two top places for comedy, two of the worst places to be for private...
Well, Texas.
Civil liberties and fucking freedoms.
Yeah, for prison.
True.
Yeah. That's
true.
Yeah, I think over time, I think anything that's new, whether it's a new drug to most people or something that's different or even a new idea... It takes time. And then think about the kids that are like 12 or 10 years old. How about the ones that are being born right now? Pot is going to be just something that everybody does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know? I can't wait to see the day where mothers will actually have a talk with their sons like, please don't drink. But if you want to smoke weed, I'll give you money for that. You know?
No shit.
If you just want to sit on the couch and watch cartoons. Like,
drinking creates, I don't know, like... 85% of the fucking problems out there. Drunk driving, fucking spousal abuse, obesity. I'm just pointing at myself, guys.
No, but it's just weird because I had this conversation 2 days ago with my daughter about marijuana. And
oh, I didn't know
you
were a dad.
Yeah. Oh, I got three kids. Yeah. So, yeah, the younger ones are going to learn, like you said. My daughter, because she's in high school. So it's around. And one of her friends, I'm not going to mention his name, got busted with marijuana in school. And she was just like, you know, she basically stopped being friends with him.
Nobody brings weed to school.
Oh, you haven't talked?
Well, I'm joking.
You should see some of the schools I teach in.
I know.
Jesus Christ.
And the teachers themselves.
The sober kids are the weirdos.
Yeah, which is true. It's like, dude, why are you sober? How can you get through these 6 hours being sober?
Well, what'd you tell your daughter?
I just told her, hey, you know, I told her, I trust her faith. Because she's very religious. She's in her faith. And I said, I trust everything you do. I said, just as long if you do something, if something happens, let us know. You know what I'm saying? If someone offers you, take some of this or whatever, you got a hard decision, you call us, no matter what.
Does she know about the birds and the bees?
She knew.
Does
that
Uncle
that
Matt
well,
need to have a conversation?
No. Yeah.
Grow creepy,
yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, we'll see that. I think
that's my daughter. With my boys, you can talk that way, but not my daughter. Yeah.
I think it's so important. Actually, one of the things I've learned is when talking to kids, not treat them like a child.
Yeah.
And by the time they're in eighth grade, their reasoning skills are very good.
Yeah.
And they're also realizing that we don't know everything as adults. Mm. And that's when they revolt.
Yeah, she's been around our podcast, so she knows we don't know shit as adults. Yeah.
But I almost like if I ever have a kid, I'll just straight up not just the cost benefit analysis of every drug. You know? It's just
which is probably the best freaking thing to do because you might want to take it to, like you said, that's a freaking
hard life.
Yeah, and it's but over time, it's the same thing of. Think about like how long it took. I don't know why it takes so long to get good information or change to happen. Isn't that weird? Like when you think of the Civil War ended right? In 1865?
Yeah.
Right? 60, and then it took another 100 years on top of that. You're like,
I think it's getting faster now with the internet.
Yeah,
and everything.
The internet.
So.
Because the internet, if you have to choose, because the internet, if you want to be ignorant, you're choosing to be ignorant.
Yeah, exactly.
It's one of those things, like, back in the day, if there wasn't the internet, I can understand why you'd trust Fox News.
Yeah. Right.
But if you have the internet, you're like, oh, it's infotainment for Republicans.
Yeah,
yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And it just, like, the, oh my God, they did a study. I was talking to Petrillo about this. And people are more misinformed. People that watch Fox News are more misinformed about what's going on in the world than people that don't watch the news at all.
No, it's true. But it goes for the other side as well. The hard left side.
Well,
it's all agenda. It's no longer news.
Problem, I think, with the political correctness is the left has almost become as conservative as the right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they won't let you talk about subjects.
Yeah,
like, true. Subjects are off limits. And you go, no, like, it's political correctness. Like, okay, be nice. But then when you talk about something that could be uncomfortable –
yeah.
You know, for someone, it's like, we don't talk about that.
We don't bring that up.
That's such a suburbanite, white suburbanite thing to do.
Right.
There's no problems. Isn't it nice here? Isn't it nice? It's
always
nice.
Yeah, my kid is not over there climbing up the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, he's being sunshine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, why are you sad? Here's some Prozac, you know?
No shit, right?
Ritalin.
I don't have to fucking feel feelings anymore.
Why are you happy?
Which is sad, because it was at a party last week, children party. And one of the kids just decided to pick up a barrel of hay and start pulling it up and throwing it at all the kids. My kids are black with a little Mexican in them. So you put that shit hay in their hair, it doesn't look good. I'm going to let you know it's tough to get the hay out of a nigga's hair. So I'm trying to tell their little mother that please don't let your kid just throw hay up in the air. Oh, she wants to say the kid has ADD, HD. I'm like, you know what? A belt will solve that shit in a minute, okay?
Yeah.
Get off your ass and take care of your child, or I will. This is what my question was to her and her husband. You know, sorry, one was Asian and one was white. I said, hey, guarantee, get your shit, because one is Mexican and one is black.
Are you
and
trying
they
to
will
tell our podcast that
you have, well, you starting a fucking race war?
Well, no.
Are you trying to tell me you have control of your two little boys?
Yes.
No, you hit them properly. Like, I look back at, I thought it was excessive growing up,
yeah.
But now I realize my dad hit me just enough to make me a good person.
Right. Which is true. Which is true. And I tell my mom.
Abuse is needed to make good people. Everybody
you
knows
gotta
this.
Put in line.
Yeah.
You have abuse is in the Bible. If people are religious, it's in the Bible. You have to beat a motherfucker because it's in the Bible.
That's right. There's a lot of shit in the Bible, though, man. You can't just use the Bible as a fucking...
I will use the Bible as a weapon and beat the shit out of my child with a Bible. Fuck that.
And heavy book. It throws well.
It is a very
it's a
big
book.
Book.
It's a thick book. That's
and
why,
I'll put a new chapter on his ass real quick. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's so weird, too. You know, I think when you're 20 years old, you kind of resent your parents or hate your parents for making you into who you are. But at 30, you're thanking them.
Yeah.
And that's what, especially, I think, I don't know how, now that you have kids, you can see the good stuff that your parents did instill in you, you know,
well,
where you're like.
Now it comes back in cycles, and you see, like, I have a teenager, and then I have little ones. And I see the way they try to think, I see they're going to get there. And I'm trying to be patient with them, but I can see my daughter and the way we talk, conversation with her. I'm like, okay, she understood all that shit that we put her through in the beginning and why she's that way. And the way she is now, she's a good girl. Very good girl. And she's on the right track. And she has a white mind thinking. Like you are, like
you
said.
Say white,
I thought
or
you
right?
Said, she has a white mind.
She has a white.
Damn it.
Every time y'all hear, right. Right mind. So she thinks, you know, she's, and like you said, she's aware that we don't know everything.
Yeah.
Like, she's a very smart girl. Smarter than her mom and dad. So she's really smart. And she understood. Like I had a grown woman conversation with our 15-year-old and my wife 2 days ago, and I was very impressed. She was teaching us shit that we didn't.
What are you guys talking about?
Yeah.
We talked about life.
Geography, basic math, all that shit is.
No.
Hey, Dad, this is where the United States is on the map.
Yeah. She was like, hey, you're in the country of California. They want to sell it back to Mexico, but it's not going
to
work. No.
Bring it up to 60.
No, but
she was splitting into five states.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I think that was about religion, because she's, like I said, she's religious, and she wants to keep her religious faith. And what our.
Tell her to watch Jim Jeffries, Ricky Gervais, Religious.
No.
Doug Stanhope.
Yeah, Doug Stanhope. What's another good. fucking, what's that scientist called? Or not that, fuck.
Richard Dawkins?
Yeah, Cosmos Glenn. There's the other guy. He's, he's an atheist, but he goes in, he was on.
Bill Nye the Science Guy?
No, no.
The magician.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, Penn and Teller? Yeah.
Oh, Penn and Teller. Yeah, yeah. Those guys are hilarious. Too.
Tell the Truth or something is what their new special is out.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Huge on that.
Who?
Who what?
Did you say something, Penn? I'm like, did we hear something from him?
Yeah, and I think, like, the, you know, anything to an extreme can be detrimental, but yes. When I think about the good stuff that religion does bring into people's lives, to be a good person, you know,
it's the scare factor.
It's a scare factor.
Going to heaven,
yeah,
is what really gives it, because people are so afraid of death, and when they die, they don't know where.
Dude, that's all religion, yeah. Like, mm-hmm. And not to discount any religion, but every religion.
Sorry, bud.
Every religion is basically there to make people feel better about death.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly what it seems like. Like everything's like, if you do this way, then you're not.
Yeah. Or how about die. Yeah? It's okay. They're in Western religions, heaven, and then in Eastern philosophies, it's reincarnation. So you no longer die.
Yeah.
Like, if you die, you still come back.
Yeah.
And Western religion.
Yeah, if you mess up in this life, you're gonna have to come back. Yeah, and atone
you
for
fuck
it.
Up. You come
that
back.
Sounds like hell.
Which it is true, man. Which it is true. All right, so you
so
know
wait,
religious?
What did you?
Are we doing this? We're going to religion right now?
No, we're not going to religion. No, because my daughter.
What do you? What did you want to say?
I was just very impressed by the way she had her conversation with her mother and father about her feelings and the reason why she wanted to choose Pepperdine, which is going to cost me way more money than fucking East Pomona. So, all right, Pomona. Cal State Pomona. Cal State Pomona.
Wait, what was
that's where the whole conversation came up.
Cal Poly Pomona?
Yeah, whatever.
I graduated from there. I'm a winner.
Yeah, fuck.
I actually, the colleges, when I applied to 7 colleges, and I was like, okay, whatever ones I don't get into, that's what'll narrow it down. Well, I got into all of them. One was Pepperdine, even though I was living in Pennsylvania.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know how much it cost.
Oh.
My God, dude, when I got the package, when it was like, okay, this is the tuition, especially out of state on top of that, is the cost of living, I went, I might be $150,000 in debt.
Yeah,
I was like,
sure.
And that's the problem with college right now. It's a debt-based society. They want most Americans to go to college. Mm-hmm. If you declare bankruptcy, what's the only thing that won't go away? Student loans.
Student loans, your taxes.
They want you to enter this world in a world of
So weird to me because people going to school actually benefits society as a whole.
Yeah. But what about
the more education cuts down on violence, drug abuse?
Yep.
You know, a host of things.
But her theory was going to Pepperdine is Pepperdine will keep her faith. And is that if she went to another school, a 4-year school, she might lose her faith.
No, that's called BS, bro.
No.
That's called BS,
I said,
how old is she, 15?
Yeah, and she said, it's my fault. She said, it's my fault because when I took them up to Malibu and I showed her how beautiful the fucking campus was, she was like, oh. And they're Christian or Catholic, whatever the fuck, I don't care. Some religious-based school.
Dude.
That's what I told her. We're going to look at some more cheaper ones.
That's what happened to me.
There's a beautiful Christian
I didn't see Pepperdine until I moved to California after college. And I went and looked at it and went,
it is beautiful.
Oh, my God.
You think you're in God's paradise. You think you're in heaven.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's beautiful.
Shit.
It's yeah.
Fucking gorgeous.
It really it's like living in going to school at a park.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's gorgeous. So
dude, just take her to Santa Barbara, dude. She'll have a good time.
The tuition fees aren't even for the schooling. It's just to keep it the lawns fees.
Oh, yeah, the lawns. Yeah, good point.
Dude, it's that one fountain they have is like, okay, all right, okay.
That's $100,000.
Like I do pretty much. Like, we got a drought because this fucking fountain's going on today. That's what's going on.
So we didn't weigh it away.
So you were impressed by her ability to lie to you.
Yes.
That's what you're saying.
Yes. Her ability to look her mom and dad in the eye
and talk about faith.
Say, hey. No, because her auntie's very extreme. Her auntie's extreme religion. Like you said, too much is sometimes detrimental.
When it cuts you off from discussion or cuts you off from
it makes
from
you
people,
close-minded or whatever. Yeah,
it makes it you does. Build up walls.
When it becomes the control.
Yeah, and it's the control. Her auntie, which we let her see earlier this year, summer, which is very emphatic religion, And she's all about, okay, you know, obviously keeping pure until certain moments and all that. And she's really religious about that. So I told her, you have to open your eyes and not listen to your auntie, your father, and all those guys. You have to make, the reason why we raise you the way we raise you is for you to make your own decisions. You know, this is things you do. It's a comic. When you get on stage, you don't just judge the room and say, hey, this guy did well. You go and make your own decision. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. When you're out there and you have to feel that moment. And I told her when she walks into life, because sometimes you're not going to have us there for her.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. You're not. You're not going to have those people there for you. You have to be able to make those decisions. I said, you're going to be driving a car in less than 4 months. And you have to make these smart decisions on your own. So you have to be able to think. I can't just put you in a car and not know that you can't think. And she said, I can. And she came back with great freaking answers and points. And she hits you.
I hate teenagers. They're so smart.
So,
they can get out of trouble. I have had to become better at arguing with children.
Yes.
Because they're amazing.
Wait, good. What? So you're a teacher?
Yeah.
So what grade do you teach?
7th and 8th.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're going to say
there was one kid. He was so good at getting out of stuff.
Isaiah.
Okay. It was Isaiah. I wish I could remember the kid's name. He's now going into 9th grade. But what I like to do is just be real and honest with the kids.
Yeah.
And
it's the best way.
What I ended up doing was just pulling him aside, and I broke down his entire personality to him.
Listen here,
please,
though,
and
because I'm sorry, you can't outthink this. I'm gonna shred you. Whatever argument you have, Wolverine. I'm gonna Wolverine it.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, he's crying and apologizing to me.
Whoa.
That kid was one of the worst kids in class. No other teachers wanted him. After that, anytime Owen was his name.
No.
Anytime Owen I would act up, I'd be like, Owen. He'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, Mr. D. And sit back down.
Yeah. He was cool. Like Jedi mind tricked him.
But he was cool because he understood that I wasn't this. The problem he was looking at us is us versus them.
Yeah.
That always causes conflict.
So
but
you put him on your level.
Yeah. When we realized, like, I was thinking about this the other day, man. Actually a couple months ago. If you look at all the problems in the world, the majority of them is because everybody has an us versus them mentality. Yeah. Think about I versus you, like
how the police
competition or us versus them. But I look at them like, dude, we're all humans.
We're all the same one.
It's all us against our ego, our greed, you know, our selfishness. And kids are – they're smart, you know? But yeah, I've had some bad times. So you know that's how, well, I talk about it in my act, but that's also how I found out I look like Dexter. Dude, first day of school, all I heard was "sit your ass down, Dexter." I was like,
"No, really? From a child? And you can pull out a weapon?
I should."
Start sharpening a knife. Okay.
They come in the next day, the entire room was covered in plastic. Yeah. Like, that's right. Guess who's behaving today?
Yeah.
So, like, how long did it take you to observe this kid and kind of break him down like that? Or
just talking to him and saying, well, every person, it's weird. Everyone's special and not special.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because, and so he thinks he's special and different. And then it's me showing that he's not, that he actually has to work hard to be special and different.
Yeah.
And
so you have to stand out.
If you really, like, everybody in our lives, like, everyone wants attention. Everyone wants
even when that.
So there's negative and there's positive attention.
Right.
Positive, I always explain to the kids, it takes hard work, you know? And then the negative attention, acting out, doing this, trying to look cool or whatever, it's instant. You get it, but then it's quickly dissipates, and you're going to have to keep on upping.
Yeah.
What you're doing in class to get that same attention. Because after a while, Owen just talking isn't going to rile anybody up.
Yeah.
So now he's got to throw a chair in class. Look at me!
Break a window. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. But it's good. I mean, I just wish that there was more money to education.
Mm-hmm.
The classroom should only be about 17, 18 kids.
Yeah, for sure, dude.
And,
me too.
I've been in schools where there weren't even enough textbooks for the kids.
Jeez.
See, which is sad.
Or desks.
Yeah, but you
fucking desks.
Yeah, but
dude,
we can go launch fucking $1 million missiles.
No, but each and every one of us has been to college. And you've been to college courses. We've been to a lecture where you're getting there and there's 132 kids in that lecture.
Yeah.
Am I correct? You're sitting there in the lecture and you're probably
in college?
In college. Yeah. You're sitting in the way back and the professor's teaching something on the, and they're putting something on the fucking whiteboard and you're sitting there.
College is education is up.
I understand that, but this is what the teacher, because my kids are kindergarten, and I walked in there on the first day, and there's, let's say, 75 to 85 kids.
How many
in kindergarten?
Teachers?
Three teachers. Jeez. So I walk into a room, and there's 30-something kids, and I'm like, do you have an assistant? And she says, no. I said, in my sport, which was gymnastics, which I go back to.
Oh, were you really in gymnastics?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. No. I
he still owns the chalk. He
really?
Needs to be white,
yeah,
is what I tell him.
Around the world with that.
Oh, my God. Do you know Siddiqui Fuller? He was the... he used to be the Golden State Warriors, the mascot.
No, what the fuck?
No. Oh, I thought like he does gymnast. Wait, oh my God, that's like, hey, you're black. Do you know this other black guy? I'm fucking so dumb. I'm an idiot.
I can name four of them.
Honestly, Chris, that is the closest you come to naming somebody. Wait.
Chris Young. Chris Young was on the Olympic team. I know Chris Young, he's black. Shani Humphrey, know him, he's black. Other than, if they weren't that high, I don't know him. I know Ron ran the program. Ron Gallimore, who's a black guy, ran USA Gymnastics for years. So, yeah, he's a black guy.
But go back to the gymnastics you were going to go on.
Yeah, my fault.
Okay.
The one bug he loves.
Yeah, the one bug now he loves the Negro.
You're tropical people. It just reminds him of home.
See, why you got to be racist, man?
I'm just being honest, man.
I'm the white guy. Now I freaking lost my... Now I lost my train
of
thought.
For 25 cents, you can feed.
Fuck y'all. Yeah. Hey, no, but when we walked into the room, and I was like, okay, well, there was a premise where you only can coach eight kids. You only can coach eight kids, which is a given rule that they have. You do. And I'm like, you got 32 five-year-olds, 5 and 6-year-olds in a room controlled by one person. And you say you can learn and listen in this environment. And most kids at, you know, this new age kids, yeah, they're like that. I mean, because I did a field trip with them, volunteer field trip with them. Oh, really? Oh, dude.
Wow. Your wife has you on lockdown.
No, my wife had me more on lockdown. The school had me on lockdown as well. It's haywire. I had 6 kids. My son and 2 kids listen. The other 4 didn't give a shit who I was or what I was or what it was going to be. And they didn't know.
But as a comic, not being able to get control of the whole room, you know how to handle that now.
Well, I slapped them. But yeah, fuck that. I was able to slap them, get one of them quick ears. Oh, no, you don't know me, huh? You don't know me. Yeah, but that was just true because our education system is shitty. And I thought, man, she shouldn't have more than 15 to 16 kids, especially at that age.
Well,
at that age.
Have you taught anywhere other than California? Or is it just...
No, just LAUSD.
Oh, okay.
Oh, fire.
You know, but what it is, I actually just have sub status, but then I get offered long-term positions during the school year.
Maternity leave and all that shit?
Yeah, someone does that. Like, the last school I was at, luckily it was in West Hollywood, and I live in Hollywood, 8 minutes away, 7th and 8th grade history. And it was great. That was the first time I've left the classroom the last day, and I didn't want to get my key back.
Whoa. Right.
I went, this is incredible.
But did you like, you guys taught me more than I could ever teach you?
It was awesome because I had to fight with them at the start. But then the eighth graders, we actually watched, you know the movie Lincoln, which is so dialogue heavy?
Yeah.
Okay, here's another problem is that people expect kids to just be kids and, oh, they won't get stuff. So I threw out any ideas of doing projects, the busy work. And I would take, chapter by chapter, I would take the period to really expand on stuff when we covered the Civil War. So when you have a bunch of eighth graders, we watched Lincoln, they all got it. They knew all the dialogue, what was going on in it. They're like, oh, yeah, because we had talked about it, and they understood it. I used examples of the slave laws. There was a class, a seventh grade classroom next door, and we had a door, and I go, that's the South.
You're eighth
and
graders,
I said,
you're already above that.
Imagine if all the seventh graders owned all of the second graders at school, and the second graders like escaped and made it through the door up here with us eighth graders, and we had to give them back. Mm-hmm. And they went, and the eighth graders are like, what? Like, you could just see, like, are you kidding me? Like, to see kids outraged.
Lupe! Lupe! No, I'm not going to do this over there.
And I love that. And just them, I like it when they go, wait, that doesn't make sense.
Yes.
When they can look at things and go, I can't believe people acted that way, or I can't believe that we act like this now.
A whole country.
And then do you take that?
They're questioning.
Did you take that, like, I can't believe I act like that, and then put it into something that's like a current event or anything like that? Or is it just simply...
Yeah, you can, you know, but...
I don't know if you did that as, like, as a teacher, like, well, you know, we're repeating history like this here, or...
I'm trying to think if I really did. Not really.
Damn, Matt. You trying to give him teaching pointers?
No, I'm just asking.
You
already
teaching them how to teach?
Yeah. She's like, now that they're thinking like, oh, I understand this, now you can bring a new
kids,
point of view.
Most of the kids don't understand that racism, a lot of the kids are growing up, and they don't understand that racism still exists.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And
nobody's been out.
Very prevalent.
Yeah, so... or they think the Civil War was a long time ago. I say, how old do grandmas live? I'm like, 75. So that was two grandmas ago. And when they go, two grandmas ago? I go, yeah. And they go, it's that holy shit.
Well, if you touching Mexican kids, that's only 45 years. Guys, I'm going to go racial all night. It's fucking, it's a humid day. My southern blood swelling.
But there are questions, though. I include this in my act now, that when I was... like deep in the hood, like the only white person probably in a 2 mile radius.
Yeah.
Like you do become when you're that only person of your race. I'd never really felt that before. Like, you were the representative.
Oh, I went to high school. I went to high school like that. Thank
is,
you.
Is
like,
this
thank
that you. Bill Burr bit where you put on the do-rag and you start dancing? With
no.
Okay.
And you end up just—it's the truth. You end up fielding questions or getting asked questions you don't want to answer.
Just, like, watch your people.
Give us some of these questions, man.
The question I had was, yo, Mr. D, why don't us black people know how to swim?
Oh, well. Well, no.
Yeah, what do you say to that?
I have the answer.
I made him Google it.
No, wait.
Do you know the answer?
My answer is they didn't grow up with pools.
Yeah, because back in the day, because of segregation.
Ask you first. No. Was that a true question or was he joking?
No, he was being serious.
He's being serious. That's a real question.
Because they don't grow up with pools. They don't have water around them.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was because black guys' dicks are so big, their sperm doesn't have swim far to the egg. It's not a...
Okay, Matt, race is off. All right,
okay.
Yeah,
no, it goes all the way back to segregation. Black people weren't allowed in the pools. And because they weren't allowed in the pools, that generation didn't learn how to swim, so they didn't teach
their kids. And their
so it just became part of the culture.
No, because the fear of their culture. Like, my mother wasn't around pools. My mom had fears of water. And then when we grew up in Seattle, we were surrounded by water. You know, my brother and those guys didn't everybody could swim. I almost drowned once. So I had fears of water. So I almost had the restraints against my children. But actually, my wife said, no, they're going. And my kids
love to swim
very well. Yes, sir.
Other theory.
That wasn't a question. That was high.
Other theory.
So, minus my earlier racial joke, is it also true that you're not allowed to get a black woman's hair wet?
Oh, yeah. That's just real, though.
Well, there's a lot of work that goes into a black woman's hair.
Yeah, that's
you know?
Shit, though. And they will not let you get it wet.
Or pull on it.
Did you see that you Googled it?
I had the kid Google it and give a report.
That's awesome, man.
So, he's in front of the class. He goes, what is this?
No, what he said, and I acted out on stage, is... he's like, and it goes back to segregation. And then he goes, man, if we would have been allowed in the pools, you never would have heard of Michael Phelps.
That's right. It would have been a Deshaun Phelps.
And Deshaun Phillips. One, eight, gold medal.
He should have got an A for that one.
Did you get a good grade on that report? That's great.
Oh, yeah.
Not a grammar. That's he gave him an A for content.
Because.
Yeah, grammar.
He goes, I can't expect you.
His act out was the shit. Wow.
Thank you for listening to Them Nuts Podcast. Hope you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned for new episodes and other Them Nuts productions. Be sure to like and follow us on all the social media networks and Podomatic.com, because we have got more to come.